I'm just going to read one book, not all of it, most of it, a book called Lines on the Liver, which is going to be published by Ferry Press, probably next year now by the looks of it, early next year. It's a book in three parts, the third is an appendix. The first part is prose, the second part is verse, and then there's an appendix. I'm reading the verse part, the second part, and if there's time I might read the appendix as well, we'll see. There's about 20 pages of prose, and then the poems start. And I don't think any further introduction is needed. Lines on the Liver. Moving eastwards under symmetry towards no. Not yet home, not till I get there. The west pales, the sky behind me a crimson slush, a dream of statement, slowly falling into bond. But crammed with people and brokenness, my solo is concerted. I feel the tab on my collar, the spine touch and radial. You're always there. I stick an ex libris over a library stamp. I walk the dark room. So you see, that's the scene setting. All that happened. And where's the poem of it? There, in your surface speaking, your body writing your soul. Tall and never still, like the autumn grass. We could happen to Alysian double music, conjugates my throat weft. You can read that poem two ways, actually. I'll read the other way now. All that happened, and where's the poem of it? There in your surface, speaking your body, writing your soul. Tall and never still, like the autumn grass, we could happen to. Alysian double music conjugates my throat weft. This sequence is the quest for a simpler poem. Third poem is subtitled For Stephen. Stephen is a little boy we know who lives in a children's home. Well, he was when this poem was written. Your mother left you in care. Maybe she didn't care. Who now is to care for and about you? That you manage and have to bear these dreadful puns and cruel rhyme, since they drive their cares. Fourth poem. I did give you these a set of explanatory titles at one point, and sent them off to somebody for some reason or other, and I've now lost them. They were called things like pausing in the garden, he thinks about his past, that kind of thing. This one in particular was called something like that. It's called something like Setting Up the New Books on His Shelves. He considers the loneliness of his life, or no, it wasn't that. It was something along those lines. Something intervenes. It's clearly not our nature to desert. I set up the new shelves from Remploy, placing the closer demands at eye level and somewhat faded or accidental emissions close to the floor and ceiling. There is no one but you in this stanza, sitting in a chair at the window. Someone told me that stanza is Italian for room. Fifth poem is subtitled The First of Three Challengers to the Office. Why do you fetch me through abandoned industrial premises, broken skylight? For what joy is there in stinting, and what can ever keep us but what we turn out? Unsettled. Furnace bracket. Northwest grit wind I catch on the brow, terminant under decline. Sixth. Why do you lead me through derelict factories? 25 watt pearl. Oh, tackle these impressed spirits on the shoulder. The vertical I speak of is no one's vantage, adjusts no one's past. People are ruined, live in holes in the ground, at the mine's bequest. Seven. Which is the third of the three challenges you recall. That's not life, that's a bloody paste factory. Why do you call me through gaping circles with every trapping comfort of love except fire? While the proximate and named you all the time keeps me to greater issue, globe in globe or arm in arm, continuation to mind of those murderous arcs. Eighth poem. This used to be called something like, sitting alone deep in the night, he thinks about how old he is getting. 6 hours into night and I'm nearly what? 20, 40, what? And what persists? Space, stars, and the singing. What do the bookshelves care if we reckon a loss? What does the town conclude? Down there is what else? Space, stars, and the track the rider makes in the sand, singing difficulties and durations into holes. Is it us? All these poems have 10 lines each. The ninth poem cheats a bit in the matter of its 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6th line being something on the long side. It's subtitled. There are no titles for any of these poems, so I have little subtitles up in the corners. This one is subtitled Letters and Boxes with or Without Messages. The old postman died. The new postman tried. We occupy the vacancy like a small boat on a green lake of postal orders, a Sabbath craft pushing obstinately through Wednesday week. Couldn't you have tried a bit harder, just when I thought I felt like getting something a bit important in the letterbox, or at least something demanding immediate action, like a new book by John Riley or a letter from Tuscaloosa? There was this splat, and there on the floor was a beige existence, a demand, an acknowledgement, a remark, or something sent from an anonymous plinth limb in decorated projection which didn't even have the courage to hurt me, and the little boat grounds on a bank of ice cream and nobody dies anymore. There is no more horror or violence or danger. Behind the little foggy window of the window envelope, there is nothing at all to get upset about. The postmen are weeping. The pre-men are sleeping. The stars are creep. I wouldn't wait. Most of these poems are little events which happened to me. Tenth poem. One of the little squares is out. That refers to the window of my study, which has a lot of little squares on it, and one of them has no glass in it. And as it goes on to say, a previous occupant stretched polythene over the gap, and sometimes at night a moth flies straight into it. Sudden thud. As I think I'm getting somewhere, sudden thud, you're back to me. The membrane holes. The next bit is difficult to read because it says KTD4XE6 exclamation mark question mark, which is a chess move. Untranslatable. Black moves. And now there's a dead moth under the cover of 10 years' diggings, a streak of grease and money dust. Eleven. Here, out of my writing, your fingertips glow in the darkness, you climb into the valley. And I know my life can never be translated out of this miserable little hole full of novels and possibilities, the very sides of it cut my hands. On the hard rocks of the Heart Vale, our sight ends. The magpie moth lays her eggs in the wound. Well, it's not that bad. 12. Spend an evening like cream cheese. The organs are poor guests to pain and star script. Waste an evening on limestone, neither work nor company, just resentment's luncheon. Too late, perception unbinds its numbers and head contacts metal fire direct, splashing blades on passing flames. Ah, yes, I'm blamed. Too true, too. 13th. I couldn't say anything the day has proved. What? What, for heaven's sake, the day has proved? 14th. The post is a tale told to get me up, up and out in the eye-bright fields. But breakfast is closer without a knock, and subtle streaks enunce return. We should re-harbour forgetting against history and live the trade. 15th is subtitled To R. Crump Somewhere. R. Crump was one of those promising English poets who suddenly vanish. Such a commotion in the grass. Can't you see all the little mortifacts running about? Can't you see John Cooper Powys bending over a bracken pit and striding off again to the nearest stationers? Now is the future to any past upon us. Can't you hear the music of the garden of the earth running screaming from the nearest box office? 16th poem. From Liverpool to Leeds, a bonfire thrown on a motorway. That happened to me. Driving along an urban motorway and somebody threw a bonfire onto it. Amazing. From Liverpool to Leeds, a bonfire thrown on a motorway. For a white smile, for a coated neck, we have raised dignity from our homes. Your excellent teeth and the light down on the back of your neck I shall remember as long as I live. We rivet our time on happy needs, but then overseek. For it's not ours to question, we surely are to answer. Surely are a shower of sparks to enunciate. 17th. It's awful there are owls and townships in the night. And I'm trembling because some sales manager said, now look here, on the phone. No resolution is anticipated. The owl, swooping over, looks ahead. The town sucks vision down its lamps. I quarry into night a day's end. Perhaps it's just that after so much rooting in humanity, we need something to dry our hands on. 18. There are ways of knowing if it is true. If it is true, there are ways. There are paths across the glassy crust, paths that change every hour. And the flesh severed wholly from fear or calculation, to arrive, to stay, breathless in two. Quotation in that poem is from a short story by Kay Boyle. That's the bit that says, the flesh severed wholly from fear or calculation. 19. Two complaints. It's not certain whether this poem contains two complaints, or whether this poem is one complaint and the next poem is the second complaint. Two complaints. I'm dragged off into the world, the one with wax ears and no genitive, no duty, no justice, no true cost. I'm caved in, when all I need is a cave to sit in and concentrate, a serenity. My office drags me through the counties like car stock. There are ways back, strategies and exercises. I follow the ground, misreading. 1419, the flash between the crevices of cash. That's a misquotation from Emily Dickinson. 20th poem goes, I'm offset. I inhabit the line between you. Riven with storm centres, and my boots leak, they are ridiculous. Speech is also a burden. One day to conclude and pass like a car in the night, on this heavily scarred dome, when the bright ring is full of flesh. In the silence of our love, every pronoun calls down the sky, our constitution. 21st. I might need that. Dust rattles in the stairwell and is ground in. The town hisses between slates. We are smudged with the honour of being so close. Smile too at the sky's blade as it strokes the heartboard edge to edge. Where it stops at your truth, raise it. 22 is the first of three disclaimers which break the rules. That's the 10-line rule. But don't break the watch. Which now says 10 to 9.
I wanted to
do this. Yes, you didn't. You changed the time on it. First of three disclaimers which break the rules. I'm not this totally solid man you posit. I don't take his praise. Love is at least specific, and my great ambition is to specify this bewilderment which moves through me like knotted string, though at other times it is more like being pressed onto the diagonal wires of a harp-shaped entrance. What exactly is like this is, for my part in it, no more than sitting here at this nightly settlement, witness to the changes of light, where that includes or indeed amounts to love, which in its turn involves and under certain pressures amounts to the necessity of knowing evil specifically, so that there are lines of high tension indicating a pulling presence in the world, solid and clear, product of you and I, to which there needs be a response. The light falls rapidly and the time switch achieves its notch. The lamps come on. The response chimes all over the horizon. For this, I'd have thought, for the chime of the response, a certain hollowness is requisite. But a hollowness which contains. Contains what, I wonder? Heart, chambered seed. Stop rattling around when I'm trying to think. 23rd, also one of the longer ones, which breaks the 10-line. I'm not this filled person you idealise. If we drank it, the grail, would it act like warm milk on instant potato, and some inner substance swell up and fill us to the inner surface of the skin, so as then to coincide with the form of the person, and we'd act as nothing but that, whatever it is, poetry, love, truth, heart. Is this where we caught selfishly the light and heat turned on us, the reflexive beam, because we long to nurture some kernel designed to replace us from within, which we do or don't call death? But what of the spaces, the empty and tough vacuities which the heart needs in order to function, And what is that function anyway but a stopgap device between our ends? Aren't we more likely to overflow with loving energy when what expands within us is an activated silence, a bolt of alien space, no part of us at all, as when we recognise the world's constant null response to our hearty, well-meaning thrusts, and shame and anger blow down a straw into our sealed centres, the very breath of patience? Then we are brought into parity in a flash of linear contact, stone to heart stone down the throat, and more than ever in years of good time, we slowly lever ourselves into balance with the whole, the abomination. And in the very early morning, the first lorries go out again. This says 42, but I think it means 24, actually. I'm not this remarkable character you entertain. My throat is cloudy, my eye oppressed, and in English, my you is diverse. I don't anyway see how any person could hope to attain to a greater degree of sufficiency, compaction, and cleverness than a brown berry fallen in the grass. Look at it, sitting there with its maps and its charts and its migratory tables. It settles its fate before it starts to a plain contingency. It waits to be eaten. And the grey, wiry grass of the uplands bends over its taut brow. I hope for the heart chambers and ventricles of the lungs not to become that one-off man, speed winner, screen eye, professor of grasp. But leave him alone and let him be. Let him be filled who will not fill, let him be clever, and let him be sure, frozen to the pebbles, nothing but suction, pseudophallic man, nothing but suction. From the fifth poem, short one. Ruined castle, ruined poet, ruined husband. See how the earth twists and cracks around to meet your fate, your first chance. 41, called Lesson Translated. 41. 26, called Lesson Translated. At one time, I, frightened, ignorant, hardly living, covering up my eyes with images, claimed to guide the dying and the dead. I, sheltered poet, set aside, hardly suffering, dared to trace paths in the abyss. Now, lamp blown out, hand more errant and trembling, I start again, slowly in the draft. Which was translated from a poem by Philippe Jacotet in his book Leçon. It says 27, I think that's right. Yeah. This is called The Anecdote, The Fall. And is in many ways the culmination of the sequence in terms of the quest for a simpler poem. The quest for a simpler poem ends up with a story, well, an event, an anecdote. The Anecdote, The Fall. The Anecdote, The Fall. Amid so much natural beauty, to slip on the snow and fall flat on your back, on the wooded hillside, the trees draped in crystal and floss, there to note your feet disappearing from beneath you and thud. And you sit up, and you stay there, while everyone fusses round, knowing that this is as far as you're going. Do you feel like getting up yet, Mrs.? No, I don't. The valleys spread out below, all the cakes and candles they've hung round you for weeks, and at a certain point, thud, and that's it. You've had enough. Poor soul. If our humiliating experiences could be relied upon to make us humble before something worth it, something actually up, like a human soul or the length of days, we'd live on sledges and confuse the stars. It says at the top, three apostrophes to the town, two then one, meaning two on this page and one on the next. So little poems addressed to the town, which it's clear from the crisis, clear from the introductory prose, is down there in the valley underneath. Moved. Three apostrophes to the town, two then one. It's a town of cake eaters. The houses shunted on top of each other and sewn out under the cliff. Everyone wants a slice and gets it, spitting still fertile seed onto coal. I love the diced plain, reared up and casting the light about. Our work, our walls, all our power given to the moon rocks and coming back so dangerous and firm. Quarries, of course. 29th, the third of the apostrophes to the town. It's a town of nutcrackers. Solid, big-chested workers with circular faces faced into the cliff face where the threat lies. Level-sliced, infertile, mollusk revenge on the firm. The 30th, last poem of this part of the book, called Coming or Going, which is a little nothing poem really, sort of goodbye poem. One thing, always, only. Pen on table, gathered evening. One thing wished, and one thing worth it. Seed fracked, matchless, gathering light. Heart be known. There's a bit more. What time is it, actually? Because my offspring altered the time of my watch. I wouldn't leave it lying around there. You never know what might... If I take another 10 minutes or so, it'll be all right, won't it? Yeah. Little red light. It's flashing on and off on it. Is this all right? There's a short prose piece following that, followed by a thing called The Replies. If I read this at a fast gallop, I should get through it in time, I think. It's called the appendix to the book. It's called Processional and Mass. There's a particularly bleak part of North Staffordshire near Leek where you can stand on the very edge of the Pennines and watch the illuminated or brick-crusted industrial flatlands run away before you towards North Wales or Liverpool. It's the edge of a plateau of high moors, of heather, bilberry and moorgrass, where denudation and burnt-out atmosphere have changed scrubland into miles and miles of growth failure. So where wheat, rye, barley and beans were growing in 1385, with oats and pasturage for sheep and cattle, only the sheep survive. This high edge overlooks the upper Churnet Valley and Roaches, with Stoke in the distance to southwest. An unclassified road runs along it. The moorlands behind are about 4 miles wide and part of the gritstone clasp on three sides of the Derbyshire limestone dome. To the east they slope down to the green and white hills at Warslow and Ecton, and high land prices start again. It is an area of empty disregard, brown and grey and purple against the faint greens. The convexity of uplands repels the human transmissive receptive organism, and they are felt as the back of something. The only buildings within miles are occasional stone farmhouses tucked into protective folds of the moors, some operative, some not, and one former drover's inn, now relying on car custom in the evenings. An army training camp under the edge sometimes sends bands of tender youths in khaki to roam these wastes in single file, with trucks, jeeps and flares, at night. And yet, By the side of this road along the edge at a junction where one road dives down the side towards Leek and the other follows the top round, on the west and Edgewood side of the road, just where the ground begins to fall away, overlooking everything, the GPO decided, for some reason, to install a public telephone box. It stands there alone, in miles of moorgrass, heather and peat gruffs, precisely 1519 feet above sea level, exposed to the constant wind. Was it put there for the sake of the army, or the sheep farmers, or even weekend hikers? Who could actually have been conceived as requiring it, walking or riding down the vast horizons, clutching his few pence? Anyway, it does not work now. The phone is completely dead, and there is no light in it at night. The GPO decided at some stage no longer to keep it in repair. I used to pass it quite often, driving to or from Leek. Whenever the weather was bad, John Dooley might be inside it. He used it as a shelter against blizzards and driving rain. John Dooley was virtually the only inhabitant of those wastelands. A shell-shocked derelict who appeared from nowhere after the war and settled here. His single occupation was to walk and walk the moorland roads all the time. He was always somewhere up there. Any time you drove over the top, there was a good likelihood of passing him on the road, even after dark. He wasn't old, he was about 40 and big, with a large black beard over which his eyes, crow-like, regarded without comment the passing car. But he was never known to approach anyone, army or sportsman or stopped car, and I believe he found speech very difficult. He was strong. He plodded unfaltering up the steepest hills and walked like a machine, the ribbons of tarmac pasted on the moorsides, with the same dark overcoat in all weathers and a large sack over his shoulder said to contain empty bottles. He slept in a hollow he had scooped out under Warslow rubbish tip. What was his daily bread or how he weathered the Arctic Februaries, I've no idea. His presence as denizen of those wastes was nothing to do with the place. I mean, I'm sure the only reason he settled there was that no one else had. An unguarded municipal dump in Birmingham would have done just as well. He was not interested in moors, landscapes, views, walking seasons, highlands, wildness, any of it. Among all that desertion, his own milieu was completely industrial. He never stepped off the tarmac, and he slept among old tin cans a few feet from a steel skip. Spring up there was a slight and delicate operation, which he may or may not have registered specifically or verbally, but he clearly had his own concerns and was busy. So that the only remaining question would be the state of that faculty of him once known as the eternal soul, and whether that had a language. And if it had, how humanly inhuman might it be in its demand? How it would speak only of the final pact between the person and his existence, and the final masquerade of truth overmastering silence even in the total image he makes. That it might be the very voice of the not-self. For the other thing I remembered was one night in thin driving snow and some hill mist, my headlights caught him in that telephone box, staring straight out, not at me, as I veered onto the top of the climb. And I was passed in a flash, but he had the receiver to his mouth and ear. And that actually serves to usher in the final section, which is a tiny group of three-liners called the replies. And each of these three-liners is in fact a reply to one of the poems I've read. When you get a copy of the book, you'll be able to look back and consult the poem in question and see in which way it's a reply. But they have other reasons for their existence as well as replying these, so I could read them in any case as a sequence of three-line poems. So I'll end by doing that. It's called Blackshaw 289. And the trouble I had getting that number you wouldn't believe, because GPO has now boarded the thing up. Blackshaw 289, the replies. 1. Walking east towards no more home, Be careful what you think, feel, dream, etc. It changes everything. 2. The second poem, remember, ended with remarks about what we could happen to and things like that. What we could is no doubt inclusive of what we never fancied. What happened is, like me, tall and never still. My trust warp hates it. 3. I think it was a little poem to Stephen. Out of care, I watch the lesser cars shoot past, accusing no one. 4th poem was the one about putting up bookshelves. I am totally unemployable. There is no one but me in this statement of error. 5. Resentment is the terminal of our decline. I crack it on the edge with flowing river song. 6. The group of challenges. Speaking as a derelict factory, I think my mind requests what my tongue lacks. Air, space, light, fire. 7. What greater issue is there than man, tucked into the horizon and folded round a stone for luck? Fire! 8. This one about sitting in the night and being 40. 8. Fzz. Is there anyone there? Fzz, fzz. It is difficult enough to love being dead, living in a hole in all the rubbish, at any age. 9. The letters and boxes, postman one. Someone breathed on the whole window. It's pitch outside and I'm not weeping. I itch with the ramifications of truth. 10. Every day the light climbs the earth, trembling with veracity, and passes on. And the knowing hand retains a speaking coin. Your move. 11. If I stick my head out of this miserable little window, the sky clatters over us preaching fidelity, and at night a slowly declining suspension of fear. 12. My mother and my father, my children and my wife, lie elsewhere, calling each to each. It's called counterpoint, and I spent every last penny. 13th was the little poem which went, I couldn't say anything the day has proved. What for heaven's sake the day has proved? 13. The day has proved cold with a thick mist in the late hours. 14. Officially, I have forgotten history, but I'm remembered by officers. Actually, God howls in the sack. 15 is the poem which mentioned job of the powers. 15. This box is my office. There is no remission, no getting through without paying. I pay me till there's naught left and stride off again. 16. But we cannot answer until the question is through us. Like a little hooked noise. Why does love fall short? Who do you think you are? 17. We also are the brutality that sets the questions and disposes. Nothing, no literature, helps. Now look here. 18. There are ways of knowing. 18. Separate from sky, separate from ground, I say humanity is perfect. I have nothing to lose. 19. I have nothing to complain about. I know I am not to keep, I have been told. And suddenly the light reversed into a lake, underholding creation. 20. They said it was me. They said it was me. They said it was me. 21. In the morning I arch my back and prize my living between the spheres. We die from within, uncertainly. 22. I come nightly to my nightly settlement. I may be human, but my heart is a dry pea that hurts a poor princess. 23. There are weak places and dead spots in everything we do. Don't worry about them. Don't let them fool you. And the lullies go out again in the roads of destruction. 24. What you are doing at this moment, however, is what is called living a life, not hoping to be or other. Welcome. 25. There is space and rain in the grass where a small house once stood. No signs of ruin. 26. It is possible to start again so often that you never properly get going, writing a life and living a writing of something else. 27. And there are nights with nothing but starlight on the steel rubbish bins. I am confused about this, but cannot help admiring the aim. 28. My eyelids hauled up on the pasty nightscape, my revenge on myself via time and air, my halt in the scar in the scar. 29. Oh, trust your one possession. The only bird worth keeping was Charlie Parker. You and I never met a happier man in society. 30, which is in brackets. Man in society, try to be more precise. And also cut out the whist, if you want to see heaven. And there, apart from some apologies at the end, the book ends. Thank you for listening.